According to Pakistan, Swami Adbhutananda, he was familiarly known as Laju Maharaj. Nobody knows when he was actually born, but when there is someone, one of the direct disciples, and the order doesn't know when they were born, they assign a full moon, because, you know, Indian birthdays are according to the lunar calendar. And I just found out this morning that they assigned him the full moon before Sri Ramakrishna's birthday. That's what the talk is this morning. He was one of Sri Ramakrishna's first disciples. We know Sri Ramakrishna's life story. He was born to very pious parents, but they were not at all prosperous in ordinary sense. And he had, Sri Ramakrishna had no use for ordinary schooling. He observed quite correctly that school is basically meant to train the student to make money. And he didn't see any point in making money because he had other ideas, even as a child. Latu, Swami Adbhutananda, was even poorer than Sri Ramakrishna. His parents were villagers, and they worked really hard, but they were only able to put, you know, food on the table once a day. So then, when he was only 5 years old, they died, and his childless uncle took on the task of bringing him up. His boyhood was carefree. His uncle was able to feed him enough. He played in the fields with the other boys who were tending the cows and the sheep. So Swami Chaitananda wrote a book about him, Shepherd Boy Who Became a Saint, because he started out as a shepherd boy. And there was no school. So sometimes he would, you know, go off all by himself and disappear, and his uncle couldn't find him, and then scold Latu. But that didn't bother him. He appreciated the simple, direct, cowherd voice. He said, "You can't have any real joy unless you are like that." And Latu was like that. His whimsical, childlike nature lasted all his life. His uncle was a very good guardian, but his uncle also had no head for money, so ultimately he went into debt and had to sell all of his possessions in his house. So he took Latu with him to Calcutta to try to eke out a living. This is what immigrants often do. People who, you know, are displaced for some reason or other, they go to the city to see if they can make some money. And they had an old village neighbor there who was working for Ramchandra Dutta. Latu was taken on to help out for the family. Ramchandra Dutta was a close devotee of Ramakrishna, and this was Latu's opportunity to fulfill his destiny. In Ramchandra's family, he did the grocery shopping, and he took the kids to the park, and he did odd jobs around the house. He would take Ramchandra's lunch to him, his midday meal at his office. Latu was naturally frank and honest. He was young and unsophisticated, and both Ramchandra and his wife trusted him. One of Ramchandra's friends suspected Latu of helping himself with some leftover grocery money. And he said, "How much?" said to Latu. "How much were you able to pocket?" And Latu said, "Sir, I am a servant, not a thief." Which was pretty cheeky for a servant boy to say to a distinguished guest of the host. But Ramchandra backed him up and said whatever he needed, he got from Ramchandra's wife. Ramchandra was always talking about the master with great feeling and affection. And when Latu heard some of Sri Ramakrishna's teachings, he was also very much attracted to them. Sri Ramakrishna said, "He who yearns for God and wants none other than God, to such a man God reveals himself. One should call on him with this simple and innocent heart. Without sincere yearning, none can see God. One should pray to him in solitude and weep for him. Only then will he bestow his mercy. Lotu pondered over these ideas. Sometimes he would be found lying down under a blanket, crying quietly. Ramchandra's wife thought that he was missing his old home, but actually he was longing for Sharanagrisha. One day when Ramchandra was about to go to Darshaneshwar to see the master, Lotu asked if he could go along. Ramchandra agreed, and somewhere between the end of 1879 and the beginning of 1880, Lotu finally met the master. This makes Lotu one of Sharanagrisha's first monastic disciples. Sharanagrisha asked Ramchandra, "Ram, did you bring this boy with you? Where did you get him? I see some holy signs in him." The master asked him to sit down, and he spoke about ever-free souls. He said, "The knowledge of those who are ever-free only needs to be unveiled, as it were. They are like underground springs, which they cover until a stonemason, digging in the earth, removes a particular rock. Then the water begins to flow." The master then touched Lotu, who entered into an ecstatic state. But this unthought-of boon from the master started off Lotu's troubles. He no longer felt like working for Ramchandra. When Ramchandra told Sri Ramakrishna this, he said, "It is understandable that Lotu should act like that, because he is longing to come here. Send him again sometime." When Ramchandra sent Lotu the next day, Sri Ramakrishna was leaving for his village home. The doctor had advised him to have a change of climate for his health. Sri Ramakrishna told Lotu to continue to serve Ramchandra. Said Leto, that's what he called Lotu, "Leto, do not let your visits to this place affect your work. Ram is giving you shelter, food, clothing, and whatever else you need. It is not right for you to shirk your duties in this house. Be careful that you aren't ungrateful." This made Lotu cry. He said pitifully, "I don't want to have a job anymore. I only want to stay here and serve you." Sri Ramakrishna said, "But if you stay here, who will work for Ram's family? Ram's family is my family too." Lotu cried and said, "No, I shall never go back here again. I want to stay here." Sri Ramakrishna explained that he was leaving for Kumaranapuram. He told Lotu he could come visit him again when he got back. Lotu returned to Dakshineshwar. A few weeks later, he found that Sri Ramakrishna was still away. He sat on the bank of the Ganga and cried. Sri Ramakrishna's nephew, Ramalal, was the priest of the Kali Temple. And he asked him what the problem was. Lotu told him that he was waiting to see the master. Ramalal reported that no matter how many times he told the boy that the master wasn't there, Lotu countered, "No, you don't understand. The master is definitely here." Ramalal went to the Kali Temple to do the Vesper service. And when he came out, he brought some prasad for Lotu. He found him bowing down and touching his forehead to the ground. Finally, Lotu rose and saw Ramlal. "Ah, where has the master gone?" he said. Ramlal didn't know what to think. After Sri Ramakrishna came back to Calcutta 8 months later, Ram sent Lotu with some flowers and fruit for him. Sri Ramakrishna asked him to stay the night, and after supper, he asked him to massage his feet. A devotee who was there told Sri Ramakrishna that because Lotu was weeping, it was the master's play. "You have transmitted spiritual power to him, and he is in an ecstatic state." So Sri Ramakrishna bestowed these unasked-for spiritual experiences on this young boy. For many seekers, some undeserved and unexpected glimpses have been known to come at the beginning of sadhana. Lotu's ecstasies were supersized versions of that. Since Lotu was already fervently attracted to the spiritual realm, they cemented his mind and heart on Sri Ramakrishna and his influence. Around this time, Hridoy, the master's nephew, left Dakshineshwar after many years of looking after Krishna. Laku stepped into his place 2 days later, sometime in June of 1881, about a year and a half after Laku had first come to the Kali Temple compound. Ramchandra eventually released Laku to be Sri Ramakrishna's servant. And now Laku had to start paying a heavy price for the earlier ecstatic states, but because he came under the master's close and strict discipline. His life was one of complete obedience to Sri Ramakrishna's directions. When he told Latu to be careful about wine and lust and wealth, Latu took it to the extreme. He had to pass a wine shop on the way to Ram Babu's house one day. He found his mind became restless. When he told the master about it, the master asked him to avoid passing wine shops because it was the odor that was causing the problem. So Latu started avoiding even the streets where wine shops were, taking a route to Calcutta that was double the distance of the standard route to avoid all areas where wine would be sold. When Ramchandra told Sri Ramakrishna about this, the master told Latu, "Leto, I ask you not to smell wine. I didn't forbid you to walk down the street where it is sold. It won't hurt you to pass near the shop. Remember this," pointing to his own body, "and no intoxicant will be able to serve you." Latu always obeyed Sri Ramakrishna's hints and directions. Once Latu had fallen sound asleep in the early evening, the master not only woke him up, but scolded him sternly. "If you sleep in the evening, when will you meditate? You should meditate so deeply that the night passes unnoticed. Instead, your eyes are heavy with sleep at this auspicious time. Did you come here only to sleep?" Latu told people later, "How can I express the deep sorrow that seized me at the master's words? What a wretch I am, I thought, that having the rare blessing of such holy company, I should be wasting my time. I started to whip my mind. Mercilessly, I splashed water on my eyes and began to walk briskly along the bank of the Ganga. When my body became overheated, I returned and sat near him. Again I dozed, and again I went out for a walk. Thus I fought the whole night. The struggle continued the next night also. It was a terrible fight. Sleep would overcome my eyes during the day, but I did not give up. The battle went on day and night. Finally, night sleep came under control, but not day sleep. To me, this is the ultimate sacrifice. Commonly, the ultimate sacrifice means giving up one's life. But dying seems easier than fighting sleep for 2 long years. To not give in to sleep every single night, constantly deny the body the sleep it naturally needs, is literally torture. The American Medical Association classifies even 24-hour lighting in prisoner cells to be torture. But Latu fought this natural human need at the rebuke of his teacher and succeeded in conquering that drive completely. Another of Sri Ramakrishna's disciples, Swami Vijñanananda, once trained a young brahmachari at his ashrama. The boy couldn't stand the Swami's letting him sleep so little, and he left. Even though Swami Vijñanananda basically promised him illumination if he persisted. Sleep, as we see, is a real bump in the road to spiritual advancement. Latu's inclination to go to extremes worked to his advantage, but also highlighted his failings. Sri Ramakrishna once asked Rakhal, the future Swami Brahmananda, to fix him a beetle roll. Rakhal politely said he didn't know how. The master again asked him to do it, saying it didn't need apprenticeship training. But Rakhal again ignored the request. This was too much for Latu. Latu scolded Rakhal, telling him he was behaving improperly. Rakhal answered, "If that's what you think, why don't you go and do it yourself? I won't do it. I've never made a beetle roll in my life." Latu lost it. He started talking in his half Bengali, half Hindi speech in a very angry tone. The master called his nephew Ram Lal to come and see the fun. He said, "Well, Ram Lal, tell me, who is the greater devotee, Rakhal or Latu?" Ram Lal said, "Rakhal was the greater." Latu burst out, "Ah, what a verdict! He disobeyed the master, and yet he is a greater devotee?" The master laughed and agreed with Ram Lal. "Yes, Rakhal's devotion is higher. Just how easily he is smiling and talking. And Latu, look how terribly angry. A real devotee, can he show anger before the Lord? Anger is satanic. Anger makes love and devotion take wing." At this, Latu was both ashamed and annoyed. With tears in his eyes, he said, "I will never be angry before you again. Please forgive me." Another time, Girish Ghosh abused the master because Sri Ramakrishna didn't want to agree to be born again as Girish's son. This made Latu, who was holding a stick, prepare to hit Girish. Devan Babu, another devotee, was there and said to Latu, "Since the master is bearing all this, why should you raise your stick?" So Latu stopped himself from beating Girish. On the way home, in the carriage, Devan told the master what had happened. Sri Ramakrishna said, wouldn't it have been awful if you had hit Girish? Didn't you notice? After he abused me, he fell to the ground when I got into this carriage and took the dust of my feet. Didn't you see his faith? This unschooled, unsophisticated boy had to learn to curb his emotions the hard way. But once he was shown the correct behavior, his firm hold on his mind and body never wavered. At the master's behest, he meditated and repeated his mantra with utter steadfastness. Swami Brahmananda reported an incident when Latu had a deep experience because of Sri Ramakrishna imparting spiritual power. "Before dawn one day," he said, "the master had us wash quickly and sit for meditation. He wanted us to dive deep in repeating the mantra. He started going around us singing, 'Wake up, O Mother Kundalini, wake up.' All of a sudden, my body shook violently. Latu also cried out. The master put his hands on Latu's shoulders and held him, saying, 'Don't get up, stay where you are.' I could see that Latu was feeling great pain. The master refused to let him get up." Swami Brahmananda said that Latu lost outer consciousness. The master continued singing the song for an hour. Another day, Ram Lal saw Latu in deep meditation in one of the Shiva temples after Sri Ramakrishna had sent him there to meditate. The boy was covered in perspiration. Ram Lal told the master, who then went to the temple and began to fan Latu. Ram Lal was asked to bring a glass of water. When he came back with it, the master was saying to Latu, "My boy, it is twilight. When will you set the lamps and light them?" Latu regained normal consciousness and was alarmed to see the master serving him. He said, "What are you doing, sir? Won't this disgrace me? It is I who should be serving you." The master said, "It is not you whom I am serving, but the Lord Shiva inside you." He was uncomfortable in such unbearable heat. "Did you know that he had entered you?" Latu said, "No, I knew nothing. I was gazing at the Shiva Lingam and saw a wonderful light. I remember only that the light flooded the whole temple. After that, I lost consciousness." Latu's blessed years with Sri Ramakrishna came to a painful end when throat cancer claimed the life of his beloved master. Latu later said, "Did you know that the master snatched me from the snares of the world? I was an orphan. He flooded me with love and affection. If he had not accepted me, I would have been like an animal, spending all my days working like a slave. My life would have been worth nothing. I am an unlettered man. He used to tell me, 'Always keep your mind spotless. Don't allow impure thoughts to enter it. If you find such desires tormenting you, pray to God and chant his name. He will protect you. If the mind still will not remain calm, then go to the temple of the mother and sit before her, or else come here, pointing to himself. At Kasipur Garden House, where Sri Ramakrishna lived from December 1885 to his Mahasamadhi in August 1886, Latu and some other young disciples served him around the clock. They fed and bathed him, cleaned his clothes and bedding. They cleaned his commode. Latu especially assured the master that he shouldn't struggle to reach the latrine. He said, "Sir, here I am, your sweeper. I will take care of everything." Latu's three heroes were Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swamiji. After Sri Ramakrishna gave up the body, the cot on which he lay was decorated beautifully and taken to the cremation ground. Ram Babu asked Latu to stay behind while the others went. "Only once," he said, "did I hear Holy Mother weeping. After that, she was silent. Never have I seen a woman with such strength." Latu had served the Holy Mother for many years at Sri Ramakrishna's request. Since he was young and innocent, the mother welcomed his help in preparing the evening meal for the master and his disciples. He was once asked to help her because, as Sri Ramakrishna said, the one on whom he was meditating was at that moment kneading the dough for his chapatis. The day after Sri Ramakrishna's cremation, the Holy Mother asked Latu and Yogan to collect food and materials for the worship of the master in Calcutta. Cooked food was offered to the master. Then everyone except the older Gopal, Park, and Latu left for their homes. Latu had to leave Kasipur soon after because of his grief. He would go from time to time to Ram Babu's house and sometimes to Swamiji's. He called Swamiji Loren, his pronunciation of Naren. He told Naren, "Brother Loren, I am telling you frankly, the master loved you so much that he could not live without you." Naren laughed. His response was, "Brother, never mind. He loved you, Shashi, and Rakal so much that he will always be with you. How little I served him compared to all of you." Latu said, "Just see how humble Brother Loren was." Latu became one of the party of Sri Ramakrishna's disciples who accompanied Holy Mother to Vrindavan for a pilgrimage after his passing. He witnessed Holy Mother's frequent exalted states. Holy Mother understood Latu and didn't mind his whimsical behavior. He would turn up at any old time and request food. Holy Mother's companions didn't like this and let him know it. Holy Mother asked her to be gentle with him. She knew his feelings were tender. So they would keep his food well covered in a certain place so that he could come and take it whenever he wanted. Swami Yogananda told of one day in Vrindavan when Latu just disappeared. Holy Mother was anxious. After 3 days, he suddenly turned up again, but he didn't say where he had been, except on the bank of the Yamuna. He said, "I am extremely hungry. Give me something to eat." Mother brought him food right away, which he took and immediately vanished again. Mother said, "Latu is strange indeed." Latu was sent back to Calcutta by Holy Mother to console the family of Ramchandra after his daughter died suddenly from a fire. After a couple of weeks, he went to the Barandagar Monastery, where the Ramakrishna Order originally set itself up. Naren asked him to take the final monastic vows, sannyasa. Swamiji gave him the name Adbhutananda, meaning he who finds bliss in the wonderful nature of the Atman. Of course, his brother monks now called him Latu Maharaj instead of just Latu. The idea once occurred to Latu Maharaj that he should try to be as great as Swamiji. This is strange, since he had heard many, many times from Sri Ramakrishna that Swamiji was head and tail above everyone else. Just the same, he redoubled his spiritual efforts. Then he said, "The more I tried, the farther ahead he appeared to be. Once it seemed that I had almost caught up to him, but then I saw him pushing on at full speed. Of what use were my meager efforts? The Lord's grace was certainly upon him. Swamiji was really high up in Lhotse's canon. In later years, a junior monk told Swami Turiyananda that he was going to see Lhotse Maharaj. Swami Turiyananda asked him to convey his love and respects. When the young monk told him, Lhotse Maharaj said, "Is love such a trifling thing? Who can really transmit love? Only Swamiji could." When this response was reported to Swami Turiyananda, he became serious and said, "Lhotse Maharaj is right." When Lhotse heard about Swamiji's success at the Parliament of Religions, he felt a great longing to hear about it. He would go to Girish's house and hear all the reports. When Girish told him that Swamiji's speech was considered the best, Lhotse laughed with joy and said, "It is bound to be so. Didn't the master say that in him 18 powers are working in their highest form? It cannot be otherwise. Can the master's predictions be false?" When Swamiji returned to Calcutta from the West first time, all the brother monks except Lhotse Maharaj rushed to see him. Swamiji asked about him and tried to find him in the crowd outside. Lhotse later reported that since Swamiji had come with some of his Western disciples, Lhotse thought maybe he had developed some egotism. When Swamiji heard this, he grabbed Lhotse Maharaj's hand and said, "You are my same old brother Lhotse, and I am your same old brother Lauren." Lhotse noticed soon after Swamiji arrived in Calcutta, he got rid of his fine Western clothes and put on a cheap chadar and shoes. Swamiji took Lhotse Maharaj with him when he toured northern India later that year. In Kashmir, they hired a houseboat, occupied at one end by the boatman and his family. When Lhotse Maharaj saw the boatman's wife there, he jumped overboard, even though he didn't know how to swim. Swamiji had a hard time of convincing him to come back. At last he told him, "I am here with you. What is there to fear? Nothing will happen to you." So Lhotse agreed to stay. Lhotse's native intelligence and wit were displayed in one interchange with Swamiji during this trip. When Swamiji said a temple they had all visited was probably about 3,000 years old, Lhotse Maharaj asked him how he knew this. "It is not possible for me to explain it to you. If you had a little education, however, I might make an attempt." Lhotse said, "I see. Now I understand the depth of your scholarship. It is so deep that it cannot rise to explain this to a confirmed fool like me." And that made everybody roar with laughter. In Khetri, Lhotse Maharaj talked with the Maharaja, who never suspected that Lhotse was completely uneducated. He mentioned to Swamiji how much he liked talking to Lhotse Maharaj. One day, the Maharaja brought out a globe and was pointing out different countries. A globe was an unknown item to Lhotse Maharaj. Swamiji took in the situation and came to his aid, changing the topic so that the king never knew that Lhotse Maharaj had never seen the inside of a school. Back in Calcutta, Lhotse again didn't stay at the mud. He was a real wandering monk, moving around the city from the bank of the Ganga to the house of one of Sri Ramakrishna's disciples. He would off and on stay at the monastery, but mostly he meditated and practiced spiritual disciplines on his own. Some of the devotees would give him a few coins for his food, and that food would be the simplest. He would just put some dried beans in the corner of his towel and let it soak in the Ganga with a brick on top to keep it from floating away. Once he meditated with such absorption that the flood tide came and totally submerged his cloth. When the tide finally went out, he found the cloth right where he had left it and started eating the softened beans. In later years, during a pilgrimage to Puri, Lhotse Maharaj asked two boons of Lord Jagannath. First, that he wouldn't have to wander here and there, but could plunge into meditation in one place. And second, that whatever he ate, he would be able to digest. In Calcutta one day, the boat he was sitting on weighed anchor, and he was taken far upriver. He ended up well past Dakshineshwar. He asked the boatman to let him off, and on his way back to Calcutta, he stopped by the Kali temple compound, where Ram Lal Dada fed him nicely. When Swamiji set sail for the West on the second trip in 1899, Latu didn't feel like being in the monastery anymore. Not that he stayed there much, but in Swamiji's absence, he couldn't bear it. He went to the press room of the Basumati Press, owned by Sri Ramakrishna's disciple, Upen Babu. Upen invited him to stay there as long as he liked. Latu would spread a blanket on the crates of paper and lie down. The noise never disturbed his meditation. Latu liked the company of the press operators, but some refined people thought they were disreputable, people of bad character, addicted to drinking and gambling. Latu countered, but they were not hypocrites. Someone present there wrote in his diary, Latu Maharaj divided men into two categories, those who had no pretenses and those who were hypocritical. He showed love and sympathy for the simple and unpretentious and kept hypocrites at a distance. Swamiji later heard about Upen Babu's care for Latu Maharaj and, looking upward, said, O Lord, bless Upen. Upen later became a very rich man. Latu Maharaj later told his devotees, liberation rests in the Master's hand. I have this earnest desire that in every birth I may get a brother disciple like Vivekananda. I didn't understand this before. He did so much for me, yet at times I insulted him, but he didn't mind anything. Remembering all this now, what misery I feel. To whom shall I express this? Surely I worship him. Just second to the Master's love is the love of Vivekananda. See, I had a strong body. I was very joyful. I didn't care for anybody. During the daytime, I would lie down on the bank of the Ganges, and at night at the Basumati Press. Then my Vivekananda Bhai went away, and immediately my health broke down. There was no other cause. For so long, I didn't disclose this. Today I'm telling you all. That is why it seems this body will not recover. Sri Ramakrishna's other disciples revered Latu Maharaj's spiritual attainments. They watched how he would lose outer consciousness in his deep meditations, never aware of food. Some days his noon meal would be still untouched in the late evening. They had to use various tricks to get him to take a little something to eat. Swami Saradananda told Swamiji's brother, you know, at night, that fellow Latu doesn't sleep at all. During the first part of the night, he pretends to be asleep, but he keeps his rosary with him. And when the others are asleep, he sits up and starts counting his beads. The Swami told Latu Maharaj, ah, you mean to surpass us all. While we are sleeping, you are counting your beads. Another junior monk said that whenever he went to Varanasi, Latu Maharaj would feed him affectionately and talk about Swamiji for hours. When Swami Turiyananda came to see Latu Maharaj, he would take the dust of his feet. Latu Maharaj would protest, but Swami Turiyananda would later explain, Latu Maharaj is such an exceptional monk. He is greater than us in many ways. Should I not bow down before him? When Swami Turiyananda was visiting him in the hospital in his last days, he would sit in silence for an hour or so. A devotee asked him why he did that. The Swami said, Latu Maharaj is almost always in deep meditation. How can he talk with me? So I sit in silence for a while and then leave, having enjoyed his holy company. Swami Saradananda, the author of The Great Master, would also bow down before Latu Maharaj. When asked about it, he said, Lot, who went to the Master before any of us. He has witnessed so much of the Master's spiritual ecstasy and samadhi. So many times he has chanted God's name to bring him down from samadhi. Latu attained long ago the spiritual state that we are in today. He is much greater than us and deserves our veneration. Swami Premananda told one of Latu Maharaja's close devotees, "You have nothing to fear. You have received the grace of Latu Maharaj. Such a loving monk is rarely seen. By the very touch of the air he moves in, you will be purified and blessed." When Latu Maharaj finally gave up his body near the end of April in 1920, after a sore on his leg became necrotic, those near him found that his face beamed with light and with an unspeakable intelligence, as if he were taking leave from his friends for the last time with an affectionate benediction. Swamiji's brother said, "We saw him transform gradually into a veritable personification of love. He kept his door open to all. Even those known for their wickedness would receive his love and sympathy. Outwardly, he remained the same old Latu, but inwardly, he became a great saint, full of love and bliss." Swami Brahmananda said that one has the opportunity for the company of such a holy man only through great merit earned in previous births. I'll end with a few selections from Latu Maharaja's advice given to devotees. "Do you think austerities performed in one life, however intense, can take you to God? Dhruva, that prince of devotees, got a little vain when he had a vision of Lord Vishnu with what he thought was just a small effort of his one life. Narada understood it and took him on a trip, in the course of which they came to a spot with a high mound. On being asked, Narada said, 'Don't you know, it is a mound of bones of your bodies of previous incarnations.' 'Ah,' said Dhruva, 'I had to come to earth so many times.' Thus did his vanity vanish. So I say, one life's austerities are quite inadequate for realizing God. Life after life, one has to go on performing austerities for his sake. All these remain deposited with him. When at last the accumulation is deemed nearly adequate, the Lord's grace descends on the devotee. He gets not only the capital, but the interest also." Latu Maharaj had mostly devotees who were family men. He always encouraged them. He said, "Those who live in this world, earning money with much labor, doing charity and the like, offering worship, performing other rituals to God, and discussing topics about God, are really praiseworthy. They are the children of God. One who, living a family life, can spend one's days remembering and meditating on God is extremely worthy of praise. However, it becomes very convenient if one who performs all family duties thinks that this world belongs to God alone." He says, "It is better to spend your time sleeping than to mix with people and criticize and slander others. Only those with no desire to be good act like that. They themselves have absolutely no resolve to be good, nor will they let others progress who want to be good. Such and such person has done something wrong. What need is there for us to get a headache over it? And the irony of it is that the moment you slander someone, his defects come and sit on your shoulders. Eat well, dress well, eat whatever you can digest, and call upon God. He whom you are calling upon is all-powerful. He knows everything. You have renounced all of these things and voluntarily accepted all these sufferings for his sake. Does he not understand all this? God knows everything. He sees your heart. He doesn't look at your exterior. He is the master controller dwelling within." And last, Maharaj, Latu Maharaj said, "It is a great sin to irritate even one person in the world." So we have our marching orders. Don't sleep as much as you'd like, and don't irritate even one person.